Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with me. I'm Bill Arnold. I am glad we have this couple hours together. It's going to be great. You know, it's Tuesday, so that means Rob Bluey is up. Rob Bluey is my Washington, D.C. correspondent. He is the executive editor of the Daily Signal, and I usually get my fix from Rob for the week about what's going on in our nation's capital and in the news, so I always enjoy him. That's how we're going to get things started today. Thanks for being with the show with me today. I can't wait for all that is ahead. Let's take 60 seconds and bring Rob on.
God is at work in each of our lives, writing a big and beautiful story. But sometimes our stories feel like a tragedy. I'm Susie Larson, host of Middays, and recently I talked with authors Robert and Nancy Wolgemuth about trusting God as he writes your story. I've taken some time to write down my thoughts on this to share with you. You can read the full post on my blog by searching the keyword story at myfaithradio.com. Fresh content every single day at myfaithradio.com.
Turntables are making a comeback. So are frosted tips. Green shag carpets? Still waiting on that one. Sometimes it feels like hope needs a comeback. And if not through us, then who? At Faith Radio, we're all about hope. When you give to this listener-supported ministry, you share hope and a future with so many families. Each program and conversation points to Jesus, our living hope, who makes the days ahead bright. Find out more and give today at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the show. You know it's Tuesday, and you know what happens on Tuesday. Rob Bluey, the executive editor of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. We're going to find out everything that's going on in our nation's capital of Washington, D.C. He is our correspondent on the ground. Rob, welcome to the show once again.
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be back with you today.
Yeah. So we're talking about impeachment again. That's come up.
We certainly are, and some late-breaking news here. In fact, right before the interview started, we just learned that President Trump will release this highly anticipated transcript of his call with the Ukrainian president. So this is fueling a lot of the new impeachment talk. Of course, it was just recently, within the last couple of weeks, that it seemed the Democrats had run out of steam on this issue. They, of course, brought Robert Mueller to testify. That did not go as well as they had hoped. There was a lot of confusion when the Judiciary Committee opened up a process to begin the impeachment, and it seemed to be frowned upon largely by other Democratic leaders, including those in the House and the Senate. But now, literally overnight, you've had a number of Democrats come out and say that they favor moving forward with impeachment. Joe Biden himself has said that if Trump doesn't cooperate, he would be in favor of it. So it's certainly given it a new attention. You have to wonder if this is, in fact, something the president would like, because it puts him back in the center of the spotlight. And there's some polling that indicates that the American people might not want to go down this path necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Rob, just for our listeners' sake, and that may or may not include me, tell me what exactly happened with that conversation with the Ukrainian president.
Sure. Well, we're going to find out a whole lot more once we see the actual transcript. But from what we do know at this point is there was a whistleblower who came forward and said that the president had a conversation with the newly elected Ukrainian president. And you remember Ukraine went through quite an interesting presidential election in which a former a comedian, a television star, was elected president over mm-hmm. the incumbent. So it was quite an unusual situation to play out in that country. And President Trump had a conversation with him after his election, in which Hunter Biden, the son of Democratic presidential candidate and former Vice President Joe Biden, came up because Hunter Biden had a relationship with a Ukrainian company in which he sat on the board. Apparently, there was some corruption or alleged corruption that took place. And in the course of the conversation, the president asked the president of Ukraine to look into this and see what could be done. And this is where we need to see more information and more details, because a lot of it's just speculation at this point. This has certainly elevated the president to you know, a position where the Democrats, who, as I said, they seem to have lost their appetite for impeachment, now have rushed to say that they want to launch a congressional investigation to get to the bottom of this. And the president today, of course, announcing that, as I said earlier, he's going to release the transcripts so we can find out what exactly happened.
Yeah, Rob, is there a legitimate suspicion on what's going on with Hunter Biden regarding some of his deals? I mean, I know he's not a lawyer, but he's not a financier. And all of a sudden he gets together with this company in Ukraine and gets $1 billion worth of capital. Or I don't remember if I'm recalling this correctly, but this is like significant deal that you just don't get unless you're a savvy guy.
Right. And as the president has said, Ukraine is a country that has faced its share of corruption. You know, as a Daily Signal, we know Ukraine quite well. We have a foreign correspondent who's actually based in Kyiv. He's lived there for going on 4 or 5 years now, and he has covered the war with Russia, the longest ground war to take place between those countries, still ongoing. We may not read about it in the news as much anymore, but it's still a challenge day to day for the Ukrainian people. And he's seen some of this corruption up close. The president has said, look, one of the reasons that this new leader of Ukraine was elected was to root out corruption. So it's perfectly appropriate for me on a call to say we're not going to give aid to Ukraine or support them militarily unless they clean up their system and rid themselves of this corruption. So that's the president's line. And you're right, Bill. There seem to be some questions about Hunter Biden. Now, it's something that has come up because, frankly, this is a similar tactic to what the president used against Hillary Clinton. And so you have a lot of Democrats, including Joe Biden, scrambling to try to, you know, say, there's nothing to see here. Move on. Let's not ask too many questions about what was going on with Hunter Biden. And I think that that's why you have an interesting dynamic here. So while the Democrats are trying to train their attention on Trump and reassert their power to impeach him, there's also the other dynamic. You have a leading candidate in the Democratic presidential field whose son is implicated with some very serious accusations. And so there's a couple of people's fortunes who are probably riding on a lot of thin ice here, because this could go either way. This could come back to really damage Trump, or it could hurt Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move to the UN meeting in New York this week. And President Trump is making a comment about the call for protecting religious freedom. What can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, it's a significant event. It was the first time a United States president has held such a forum such as this. Our Heritage Foundation president, Kay Coles James, was actually there in attendance to see it up close. And this is a big week in New York. Every year in September, leaders from across the world gather for the United Nations General Assembly and for President Trump to kick off his week by announcing this new initiative to protect religious liberty, I think says a lot about his administration's focus on this issue. He's specifically said that they're going to spend $25 million across the globe to protect religious freedom. It's an issue that this administration has been passionate about. I know Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has made efforts to raise awareness about those who suffer across the globe when it comes to religious freedom. And we know that this extends to all types of religion: Jews, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, Yazidis. There are many people across the world who suffer the plight of those who want to restrict their ability to practice their religion. In the United States, we deal with a whole different set of issues. And in across the globe, it seems that we don't necessarily take for granted. We sometimes take for granted what we have here, because there are really true, intolerant forces, leaders across the world, tyrants who want to persecute those who practice their religion.
You know, Rob, what percentage of the world's population live in countries where their religious liberty is either threatened or banned? What's the number?
I would say it's a very high percentage, frankly, because I think very few countries have that First Amendment protection that
That's true.
Enjoy as part of our Constitution. You know, I was talking to we interact quite frequently with the technology companies, Google and Facebook, and we're always advocating as conservatives for freedom of speech and for freedom of expression and freedom of religion, those hallmark values that we hold so dear. And it comes as a surprise. I heard this from both individuals who work with Facebook and Google. And I'll tell you, Bill, they say that leaders from across the world do not have the same respect. And their solution in many of these cases is just to ban speech, to ban religion. They have no tolerance for dissent. They really, in many cases, are working against us. Where we're having debates in this country about speech, it's on a completely different level in those countries, where they just want to stamp it out entirely. And you look at what's happening in China with the Muslim population and the horrific things that are being done to them. I mean, we've known for years what goes on with the Falun Gong, but you know, you see what's going on with the Muslim population there in China, and it's truly frightening to think that they can get away with this. We need to hold these countries accountable for these human rights abuses.
Now, I also know that Andrew Brunson, Pastor Andrew Brunson, was in the audience at the UN in New York, and Trump did recognize him, and he was in prison in Turkey for 2 years. And it seemed that the president made a comment that the previous administration didn't seem to work too hard to get him out.
Well, this president, I mean, he's very proud of this. In fact, Robert O'Brien, who was previously up until his new job as National Security Advisor for President Trump, you know, he was in charge of hostage negotiation. And when the president appointed him, he called out O'Brien's leadership on doing things like this. So, yes, when it comes to Andrew Brunson, who was the American pastor in prison in Turkey, you better believe that President Trump is proud of the work that his administration was able to do in terms of freeing him. And there's a lot of other people who I think still are suffering that plight. So, I mean, we can secure a big victory like that, but the work continues.
Yeah. Rob Louie is my guest, executive editor of the Daily Signal. DailySignal.com is that website. We're going to take a very short break and then be back with Rob in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Rob Louie is my guest, as he is always on Tuesdays. He is the executive editor of the Daily Signal. You can go over to dailysignal.com to check it out. Rob, let's talk a little bit about some of the protests on climate change recently in the in your town in D.C.
Yeah, it made for an interesting commute getting into the office yesterday. Fortunately, I didn't have it too bad. I was only about 15 minutes delayed. I did have to take a different route because they closed down some of the big arteries in Washington, D.C., and it did cause, you know, bigger disruptions for other individuals. You know, there were some who, you know, frankly questioned whether or not having people idle in their cars was helping the environment.
Probably not.
In many ways. Probably not. You're right. But, yeah, they certainly did try to send a message in terms of shutting down Washington, D.C. And, look, this is something that they believe passionately in. We know that they go to extremes to do this. I think that they are frustrated. It's clear that they are frustrated, the fact that they've resorted to this type of behavior. But I think at the end of the day, Bill, I mean, I come back to the issues that are at hand. I mean, we look at policies that they've proposed, like the Green New Deal, and we see ultimately that even climate scientists themselves say that it's not going to have any measurable impact on global temperature. But what it is going to do, it's going to hurt the poorest among us by imposing high costs on their energy consumption. And it's, you know, not going to have largely any impact on those who are wealthy enough to afford, you know, continuing to fly around in private jets and transport however they do. You know, so I just think that, you know, it's one of those issues where are people really in search of a solution here, or is it one of those where, you know, they like to make a lot of noise and raise some money for their cause, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of hot air.
Yeah. Rob, your thoughts on the 16-year-old Swedish girl that gave a speech on Monday?
Yes, well, I applaud Greta for her passion. I mean, clearly she is. I mean, if you listening to her, you certainly felt the anger in her voice, and the fact that she traveled across the Atlantic Ocean by boat. Of course, they probably had to consume a whole lot of carbon to fly it back and fly the crew over to the United States and back to Europe. And, you know, here's one of those things. You know, here you have a teenager who's speaking her mind. You have a lot of teenagers with a lot of strong opinions. At the end of the day, I disagree with a lot of what she has to say. I don't think the world is going to come to an end anytime soon as another, you know, young member of Congress, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, has alleged. But, you know, it's one of those things where whether it be in school or other places, I mean, climate change really has become an addiction, a religion in some ways for individuals who unfortunately have abandoned you know, Christian beliefs and God and have adopted this as their calling. And I think that it's unfortunate because I think that there is some misguided information, and those who actually want to take the time to study and talk about the issue could learn a lot.
Yeah. So when this 16-year-old teenager says, you know, you adults aren't doing your job, as a result, we have no future. What do you think about that?
I think it's bogus. You can go back to the 1960s, and in fact, we have, and we've Jarrett Stedman, who I know has been on the program, has done a great article about this. And you look at the hysterical projections that they were making back in the 1960s and 70s, that we were going to have a famine, that we needed to restrict the population. I mean, Paul Ehrlich was saying that the Roman Catholic Church needed to abandon its position on birth control. We needed to sterilize individuals. We needed to control the population. All of these frantic and wild claims that have been made for 40 or 50 years have not panned out or come true. So she can sit here today and tell us and tell young people that their future is doomed. But I think that in 15, 20, a generation from now, Americans always find a way to overcome the challenges that they're faced. I think that we've seen progress being made, even in the Trump administration, although they don't get credit for it when it comes to the environment. This administration's done more to clean up those Superfund sites and cities all across this country than the previous administration did, despite its glowing environmental record. So, Bill, I am not panicked, and I would encourage any young listeners not to be panicked. I think that we will find a way to overcome some of the challenges that we might face, and I would hope that Greta stops scaring people because I think that that's what she's doing.
Lots of fear-mongering. I did see an article that said coastal cities will be underwater within 8 to 10 years, and that article came out in 1922.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, so we do have a history of lots of stories like this, and you know, lots of people saying science indicates that we're going to be underwater in 8 to 10 years, and that was 1922, 100 years ago. So, all right, let's talk about the border security. I know what can we learn about round one? I think President Trump has won round one, huh?
Yeah, we have a great article about this on the Daily Signal. I encourage your listeners to check it out. It has a lot of detail about just exactly how, you know, in many cases, the Democrats politicized this from the moment that Trump was elected. Look, he made a promise to the American people that he was going to build a wall and implement several other policies to help stem the incredible flow of illegal immigrants into the United States. And it took a while. It took a while for things to get started because of that resistance, but the wall is being built. But I think more importantly, there have been some important policy changes that the courts have recently upheld that have allowed the massive influx to at least be stemmed a little bit. There's still a number of people coming across the border, and there's still work to be done. But yes, you're correct. By working behind the scenes, I think the president was probably more effective than taking this directly to the Democrats. We had a couple of government shutdowns over this, but the fact of the matter is the agreement that he signed with Guatemala, the fact that he made those tariff threats to Mexico, and they stepped up with their enforcement. Those have had a big impact.
Yeah. Rob, does capitalism help advance medical technology? If we do Medicare for all, will that block medical progress?
Well, I certainly do think it will, and I'll tell you why. Because anytime you're putting the government more in charge of your life, and certainly the private industry, I think that it would have negative consequences. And what does that mean? It means you're not going to see the progress being made that you would otherwise see. Look at the success that we've seen in technology in just the last generation when the government keeps its hands off. Now, if the government tries to manage everything or is setting the prices and controlling the process, you better believe that things are going to be jammed up in a bureaucracy. I mean, things are just not not going to run nearly as efficient or smoothly. So I think that it's a good lesson to consider. It might not be the first and foremost on our minds when we think about Medicare for All, but it's certainly something that is going to have a detrimental effect on probably all of our health.
Yeah, and this will continue to be a big topic in the 2020 election?
Oh, yes, it's going to be a big topic because there's starkly contrasting views, even among the Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, you have some Democrats who are out there passionately advocating for a complete government takeover of healthcare, which would be more of the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren crowd. And then you have those like Joe Biden who want to simply expand on what Obamacare did, which, you know, disappointed many on the left. And then you have a completely different view on the right, which is Donald Trump, who I think, you know, although he, you know, we're still waiting, I guess, for his official announcement, it seems like he's moving toward the direction where you're empowering patients, you're giving more control to the states and getting the federal government out of the business of managing healthcare. And I think that that's a positive step in the right direction.
Yeah. Rob, I don't know what I'd do without you on Tuesdays. Thank you so much for doing the show and being such a faithful guest.
Well, Bill, thank you for the opportunity. It's always great to be with Faith Radio.
Thank you so much. Rob Blue, he's been my guest, executive editor of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Ted Ross with a Faith in Life Minute. When we're suffering, it's easy to wonder if God is really there. Here's a good reminder from best-selling author Philip Yancey.
We all have our own hardships, our hard times, things we wish were different. And we don't have the promise that those things are going to be taken away from us, magically removed. I mean, even Jesus did not have his hardship magically removed. We have the promise that God can take those hard things and redeem them in a way that is good for us, that actually benefits us, makes us more like the person God wants. I love this phrase I learned from Dallas Willard, who said, "For those who love God, nothing irredeemable can happen to you." Nothing bad can happen, bad things do happen, but nothing that can't be redeemed, that God cannot use for your good. That's a strong promise that we can cling to.
More from Philip Yancey can be found at myfaithradio.com.
I always appreciate Rob Bluey. Coming up next, we're going to talk to an Olympian, a U.S. Olympian, 1988, competed in the high jump and world record-holding winner, Trish Porter Topmiller. How about that name? She's written a book, and she knows her fair share of adversity. She's got quite a story to tell. You're not going to want to miss this. That's all coming up next after a short break. I love it. Whenever I get a chance to talk to any kind of world record holding anything, in this case, Trish Porter Topmiller is competed in the U.S. Olympics in 88 in the high jump and holds world records. So I'm always excited to talk to her. She's written a book that talks about you're never too old, too rich, or too anything to meet Jesus. And her she's got quite a story. I'm not going to tell any of it. I'm going to let her tell it. Trish, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Oh, you kidding? This is an honor for me and our listeners. As I read the synopsis of your story, it takes me back. It's unbelievable.
Oh, Well, yeah, it is. It's a lot, filled with lots of ups and downs and curveballs, I guess.
Yeah. Let's start with the athletic end of your career. You started off like in grade school, loving sports, started young.
I did. My parents both encouraged me to do sports because I was hyperactive and dyslexic at the time. And so they said, you need to keep her busy and active. So I was the first girl in Little League Baseball in Northern California. So really enjoyed that. And then in PE in eighth grade, I had we were learning the high jump. And I was terrible. And I would fall into the bar. I'd take off the wrong legs. I'd jump off of both legs. And my PE teacher said, don't ever become a high jumper because you'll never be any good at it.
Okay. Little did that person know you went on to compete in the Olympics in high jump, and you hold world records now. I love these stories. Trish, I love these stories.
I know.
Can I just say na-na-na-na-na?
So, yeah, it's fun. It's nice to be able to not listen to those words and to prove them wrong.
Of course.
You know?
Of course. And you competed in the 88 Olympics?
I was 88 Olympics in the high jump. I was not expected to make the team. Nobody knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I say that it was proof that there's a God, that an unknown can make the Olympics in the high jump like me.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And then you also, do you hold some world records in high jump?
So I held, I broke the world record four times for women age 40 to 44.
Nice.
I high jumped 5'9¼", which was the same height I jumped in high school and higher than what I jumped in college.
Fantastic. Now,
so, yeah.
There's also been some horrible tragedies in your life. Would you talk about those?
Wow. So at the Olympics, I met my husband, or future husband, I should say, Pat Porter, who was a two-time Olympian in 10,000 meters in distance running, and also eight-time national U.S. national champion in cross country. And we got married a little over three years later, and then we had our son, Connor, and we had our daughter, Shannon. And Shannon was a figure skater. So this is 2012, and Shannon was a figure skater. And we were going to Colorado Springs, between Colorado Springs and Albuquerque, for coaching. And we were on our way home from Colorado Springs, and the Olympics were starting the next day. And I had several appointments to do TV and radio set up, because I often did that during the Olympics. And I got a phone call, and I looked on my phone, and it was Channel 13 TV from Albuquerque. And I thought, oh, my, it's going to be kind of a busy few days with TV. And there on the end of the line, I heard a lady's voice, and she said, can you please confirm that your husband, Pat Porter's plane, went down in Sedona, Arizona?
Oh, my.
And at that moment, my whole world changed. I was devastated. What do I do? I think. I can't. I got to think. I didn't know what to do. So I hung up, pulled the car over. I got in the back of the car with my daughter, who was 11, Shannon, and we prayed. And I prayed that they would be alive. But I knew the answer to that, that they wouldn't be. And it turned out on July 26, 2012, my husband of 20 years, Pat, and then my 15-year-old son, Connor, who had just gotten a medal at U.S. Fencing National Championships, who was just full of life and loved the Lord. And then along with my son's friend, Connor Manch. So it was two Connors, passed away in a small plane crash, and my husband was the pilot. And so it was my guys. It was my guys, our laughter. So half my family was gone in that instant.
I'm so sorry. That is.
Thanks.
And when Channel 13 had called you, that was the first you heard about any of this, right?
Oh, yeah.
They were asking you to confirm something that you didn't even know anything about.
That I didn't even know. And they felt terrible. They felt terrible. And and later I actually called them back to find out. I needed information. Where do I begin? And so they actually connected me with the fire department that was down at the crash site at the time.
Mm-hmm. And as you're mourning this loss, you've got other challenges you're facing with your stepmom and your dad.
Yeah, my dad, as I talk about in King Here, the book King Here, was an amazing man, and he had become very successful business wise. He was a multimillionaire. He was super adventurous. I say one of my favorite. I have a couple favorite adventures that I talk about, and one was he went around the world in 26 days on the Concorde, which is a supersonic jet, and then once took a date, flew her on a private jet from San Francisco to San Jose so they could have dinner on the Goodyear blimp while flying over Los Angeles, the night city lights. So I just love, I think that's, wow, that's lots of points for a date.
Yeah.
But he had really my dad had come to a place where he believed his financial fortress was invincible and he had no need for God. And he even told me once, he looked at me and said, I have more money than God. And if I lost half of my money, I'd still be rich. And so that attitude proved to cause some issues because it turned out then he had a series of losses. He had a series of losses and became addicted. And one of them was he became addicted to OxyContin and oxycodone,
mm-hmm.
The narcotics that are highly addictive. And so both of them, both he and his wife, Debbie, who was 20 years younger than him, spiraled and were, he would sleep 21 to 22 hours a day and never get out of bed. So that's what we were dealing with. And so I should really say my brothers were, they lived in California, so they dealt with him mostly. But when I lost my husband and son, my dad had to fly in and come in, and he was late for the celebration of life, and he wasn't there to support me, which was really difficult because that's a time where you really need someone to be around you to be strong. But instead, he wasn't coping very well at all.
Mm-hmm. And Trisha's book is called King Here, Never Too Old, Too Rich, or Too Anything to Meet Jesus. Now, I'm so curious at that moment that your dad did come to saving faith in Christ, didn't he?
He did. He did. Wow. So he was 82 years old. And the thing is to me, I feel like I thought it was impossible. I had been praying for him for 35 years, right? And I think that's what we do. I think we look at people and we say, they could never meet Jesus. They could never come to know him. And who are we to think that? We have such a big God who says, yeah, watch this. And my dad, who had never gone to church before, or I can't say never gone, almost never went to church. We had asked him for years and years. And he finally said yes to my brother one day to go to church. And what was incredible is once he finally said yes, there in the second row was, I call an angel. Okay. His name was Michael, right? Michael,
yeah.
Angel. Okay.
Yeah.
And he was worshiping the Lord. He would sing and praise God with his hands raised and his whole body moving. And for some reason, my dad was inexplicably drawn to him.
Oh, wow.
And yes, and which it made no sense. It was kind of a conservative church. And usually if somebody's raising their hands, frankly, if you've never been to church, you're kind of uncomfortable with that, right?
Yeah, I think you're avoiding those people, not being drawn to them.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Yes. But my dad was drawn to him. And so he would call my brother in the middle of the week and say, hey, are you going to church this week, Chuck? Because I want to go with you. And can we get there early? And the thing that's funny is my dad never was early for anything. He lived on what we call King Standard Time, which is about an hour to too late.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so he would get there. So he was drawn to church. And then my brother thought, well, you know, it's time to ask him if he wants to accept the Lord. And so he asked my dad, and my dad said no. And kudos to my brother for being bold. So then my brother went up the next week to Michael, the angel, and said, Michael, you know, can you please talk to my dad about Jesus? He likes you, and maybe you can get through to him. And Michael looked at my brother and said, God's got your dad in his hands. God's got your dad in his hands. Who says that?
Wow.
To me, that's, I know. To me, a Christian would say, sure, I'll talk to your dad about Jesus, right? That's,
right.
That's how we should respond.
Yes.
And he didn't. That's how he responds. And so it turned out the following week, James, my new husband, and I were going to my dad's 82nd birthday in California. And I looked at James and I said, you need to talk to my dad about Jesus. You need to do that. And he's like, well, I don't even know if I'm going to get time with your dad alone. And I said, no, you're the one. You're the one. And we had lots of people praying for us. And it turned out that my dad, James, was there at the house. And Shannon and I had to leave and go. Shannon had to skate. And James thought, I'm going to do my Bible study here in the kitchen and hope that maybe Chuck comes in. And lo and behold, my dad did get up and come in, because remember, often he didn't get up till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And he came in and they started talking. And James asked if he's ever read the Bible before, and he said no. And so then James said, so Chuck, if I were to ask you today, if you died and went to heaven and you were at the pearly gates and they said, why should we let you in? What would you say? And my dad said, well, I've been a good person. And James said, well, yeah, but there's a problem with that, is that only perfection gets in heaven with God. And none of us are perfect. We've all sinned and we all fall short. So Chuck, tell me, have you ever lied? And my dad said, yeah, I have. And he said, well, that's a great example of a sin that separates us from God. And so then he went on and talked about how, thankfully, God has made a way for us to be able to be in heaven today, and that he sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for us. And if we believe in him, then that separation he fills that separation, and we can be in heaven someday with God. And so they continued talking, and James asked them about his wife, and he said, usually he says, you don't understand how I feel because I've lost my wife. You don't understand my pain. But James had lost his wife too. And so he did understand my dad's pain. And so he was one of the only men in his life that did understand the pain of losing someone, and losing someone prematurely, and often the guilt that comes with that, that you could have done more, that you didn't do enough. And so they continued to talk. And now my dad usually hardly ever talks very long with anybody, so that in and of itself is a miracle. And then pretty soon James ended up asking my dad if he wanted to pray to receive Jesus. And my dad didn't really answer at first. So they kept talking. And then he asked again and said, Chuck, would you like to pray to ask Jesus to come into your life? And my dad said, yes.
Wow.
And I know. And there they prayed. You know, he just prayed a simple prayer. Jesus, please forgive me of my sins. Come into my life and help me to live a life that pleases you. Thank you for sending Jesus to die for me. You know, amen.
Mm-hmm.
And at the age of 82, after never being really not growing up in the church at all, he accepted the Lord.
I just love that, Trish. And I'm once again reminded of the power of the invite. Do you want to pray mm-hmm. to receive Christ right now? That's
well,
so powerful.
It is very powerful. And I have on my website, trishportertopmiller.com, I have, you can download both Chuckisms, and I have How to Be Prepared to share Jesus with other people. And I think that's really important, that so often it's seven steps to being prepared, and the last step is asking, and the step before that is being bold. And I think so often that we worry about what somebody else is going to say. But we forget that there's a Bible verse that says God has prepared their hearts. So God already has placed himself in their hearts. We just need to be bold and ask them. And I've done that with several people where I'm thinking like, ooh, you know, what are they going to think? What are they going to say? And then I just ask them, hey, do you want to pray to receive Jesus? And then I'm shocked when they say yes. That's the funny thing.
Right.
I'm shocked. I'm
right.
Like, oh, yes?
Right.
Oh, my.
Yeah, God's done his work. Trish, let me take a short break because I need to, and then we'll be right back. Trish Porter Topmiller is my guest, and her book that we're chatting about is called King Here, Never Too Old, Too Rich, or Too Anything to Meet Jesus. We'll be right back. I am glad we have not been gone too long. My guest is Trish, and Trish Porter Topmiller. And I always have to, I always hesitate a little bit on three names, but Trish Porter Topmiller.
I know.
Which is fine. I just feel like we've become friends quickly, and I think of you just as Trish. And I got to get that, I got to get the other Porter Topmiller in there. But she's written a book called King Here, Never Too Old, Too Rich, or Too Anything to Meet Jesus. And really a fascinating journey. And your experience with people that have had opiate addictions in the family. Any word for those people struggling with people in addiction like that?
So, yes, you are not alone. That there are so many of us who have struggled with that. And it is serious. And don't ignore it because it really just won't go away. I encourage families to try Naranon meetings for family members, but you know, be bold. Don't just ignore the issue. Get information. Get help. Don't be secret about it. Get it out there, because to me, when you bring things into the light, it gives God a chance to work, and you can have an impact on the course of your loved one's addiction. I really do believe that. And so, stop negative enabling them, or making excuses for them, or paying for them. Have an intervention, make a plan. In my case, the doctors were giving lots of different prescriptions and a high quantity in pills and multiple prescriptions. And my brother even called one of the doctors and said, "Hey, you need to stop, you know, or I'm going to turn you in." There may need to be tough love, but don't give up on them. Don't give up on them. Keep praying and get other people to be praying for them.
You know, Trish, I get the feeling reading your book, King Here, is much like this conversation where we just get to sit down and have a warm, friendly conversation with someone who cares about you and loves you and wants to equip you to share your faith and be bold. And I know that's come from your obstacles that God's put in your life and some of the things that you have, some of the adversity. And you've been amazing to put all this in a book and give people a chance. What do you hope people walk away with if they read King Here?
Well, thank you so much. It's been a neat journey, and I hope there's a lot of really fun stories in there, and then there's the fun Chuckisms that are different sayings that kind of draw people in.
And that's your dad, right? Your dad,
that's
Chuck.
My dad, Chuck.
Yes.
So he kind of lived, I lived with lots of Chuckisms. So those were either sayings that he made up, or they were quotes from somebody else that he tweaked,
yeah,
or they were somebody else's quotes.
Okay,
so
can you give us a couple?
So one of my favorites is dream, then go after that dream with sweat and commitment. And he gave me that on a piece of paper when I was getting ready to compete at the high school state championship. And I carried that with me for so long.
Beautiful.
And then we have Fords past Cadillacs all day long. They just have to work harder. And I have a list of those Chuckisms, as I said, on my website, TrishPorterTopmiller.com. That's T-O-P as in Paul, M-I-L-L-E-R. So you can download, you can get those for free. And so I love those. And so the book is encouraging. It has fun stories. It's a fun read that kind of draws you in. But it also talks about the life's up and downs. And hopefully it'll give you hope and encouragement in getting through hard and difficult times, and how to trust God through those times. And that's some of the, you know, the fun part about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had an experience because you prayed for your dad for 35 years. I know there's a lot of people listening who might be in that similar situation, Trish, where they go, "That's me. I've been praying for my loved one for 35 years. What can they be doing? What are some steps they can be do to just get ready to talk to someone when God calls that conversation?
So that's the seven steps to being prepared to share Jesus with somebody. And again, you can download that on my website. But the first one is to pray. So pray that God will prepare your heart and the person's heart that you want to share with, and pray that he will open their eyes. Number two is be prepared. So have a plan, think ahead, and be prepared how to share maybe your own life testimony and how God has worked in your life. Three is be watchful. And if you have prayed and are prepared, then wait and for God to open a door. And then once he opens a door, for step four, walk through the door that God has opened and start talking to them and ask them questions. Then five is to be loving. So have an attitude of love and ask questions kindly. Six is to be bold. Don't be shy. Don't be apologetic. Be confident and excited about the good news. Be bold with sharing Christ and what he has done in your life. And then seven, as we said earlier, is to ask. Remember to ask if they want to pray to receive Jesus. Practice the words of a prayer, of what you want to say with them when it is time to pray, so you know.
Mm-hmm. Trish, I don't get Olympian athletes on my program very often, so I'd love if you would share any life lesson you got and or you learned as an Olympian and a world record athlete.
So one of my favorite, favorite lessons is the hardest lesson, of course. It's when you're not competing well and you're not doing what you want to do. And so for those of us who put who we are in our performance, mm-hmm. or our work, and we stand on that, it was really the time when I didn't do well. And I spent a lot of time in the Word and memorizing and realizing who I am is not based on how I do or how I perform. It's based on what God thinks of me. And so what does God think of me? God loves me. God died for me. God has saved me. He's adopted me. So there are so many things that God thinks of us that are so much more important than just how I compete or the work I do or the money I make. So really putting who you are into who God thinks you are, mm-hmm. and what he says about you.
And then now as an athlete that once competed at the level at which you competed, when you wake up in the morning, what hurts?
That is so not fair.
I know, but I had to ask.
I know. So I am in my 57. Wow, I'm 57 now. I hate to admit this, but 5 months ago I had my hip replaced. And so that was a tough journey for the last year, but thankfully I'm kind of on the other end now, and I'm very grateful that it's so much better. So, you know, there's things that always hurt. You know, you have a little back here and there, you got a little knee here and there, but I work pretty hard to try to take care of my body through massage and chiropractor and exercising and strength training. And so I do work hard still.
Yeah.
To try and stay on it. You know, it's a journey. It's a long journey, and it's a daily journey and process.
Yeah. Well, I had to ask. And your daughter Shannon, she's figure skating competitively?
She's a national. She's competed at nationals in figure skating. She's 18. And unfortunately, she just a couple months ago broke her ankle.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know. And so she had surgery. She is now out of her boot, and so she's doing lots of physical therapy and strength training and agility training, and hopefully we'll be back on the ice end of next month.
That's awesome. I want to let our listeners know TrishPorterTopMiller.com. TrishPorterTopMiller.com is the website. You can go get some great stuff there. And her book is King Here, Never Too Old, Too Rich, or Too Anything to Meet Jesus. Just really been nice to meet you, Trish. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you, Bill, for having me.
Been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you. All right, we're going to take a little break. That wraps up hour one. We're going to have a great hour two coming up. We'll take be back in a couple minutes. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.